I would invite you to take a Bible and turn to Romans chapter 13. Reading verses 8 through 10. Romans 13, 8 through 10. As we reflect upon indebtedness for a few moments before we come to table, as we will be reminded again of our indebtedness to God. Romans 13, 8 through 10. Owe to no one anything except to love one another. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Are you indebted to someone? And I'm not just talking about being indebted to the bank for the mortgage or the car, or indebted to the power companies or the phone companies or anyone else, although that does fall into our lives. But are you indebted to someone? What was the situation that caused you to become indebted? I mean, how do we express those things? How was it solved? Why did you feel indebted? Or perhaps you even said some things like, we know I owe you one. I owe you big time now. You know, one day, I hope to be able to pay you back because I know this is really something. There are all kinds of ways that we express that sense of being indebted to someone. And oftentimes as we do that, though, back in our minds, we're really not all that happy we're indebted, right? Because that means that we can't just think about ourselves and what we have and what we want, but now we think about someone else and we owe them something. They have done something for us and we are indebted to them. In fact, many of us, if not most of us, at some point in time do our very best, especially as we get a year or two further along in our lives, to try and get out of all that debt, right? We'd like to get to the point where if we ever retire, we don't have a whole bunch of debt hanging over our heads. And that's difficult. Of course, I forget. I heard a report the other day about how many hundreds of thousands of dollars each man, woman, and child owes on the national debt. But I don't guess we'll ever get out of that one, except through death. But our own indebtedness. We're indebted for so many different things in so many different ways. But what does that mean? What is a debt? Here, Paul says to owe no one anything. That is, do not owe them a debt, except for one thing. Well, the interesting thing is that debt is a synonym in Jewish thought. And when Jesus prays and speaks of debt, debt is a synonym for sin. Debt is a synonym for sin. When one has a debt that they owed, they were no more free to go on about their lives than if they had committed a sin against someone and needed to make rectification for that sin. And so when we read, or when Jesus says, forgive us, we should pray, forgive us our debtors, those who are indebted, or forgive us our debts as we forgive those who are indebted to us, excuse me. Forgive our debts, what we owe to God, wipe it out, as we forgive or have forgiven those who are indebted to us. And yet in that prayer, we're asking God to forgive us just like we forgave a debt. Jesus uses parables about people who owe debts and try to go on about their lives without paying those debts. But that debt makes us a slave of the one to whom the debt's owed, correct? We're in servitude to that person until the debt is paid. And not just monetarily, but we are under a moral and a spiritual sense of indebtedness as well, and have an obligation to make it right. So sin is debt. Debt owed to God, but also debt owed to the person against whom we sin. And debt in itself is just like sin, something that has to be paid. Theron Price, who taught for a number of years at Furman University, and some of you, if you took religion classes at Furman a few moons back, might have even had Dr. Price. Theron Price writes concerning sin. Sin represents an intrusion into creation and into human experience that should not be there. It does not belong. Sin is a violation of God's order, a misreading of God's reality. It is a corruption of the human condition and an impairment of all human possibility. In the Bible, sin is always viewed in light of God because sin does not have its own light. It brings darkness. Sin is rooted in prideful self-centeredness and comes into expression through a misguided will and value system. It is rebellion against the very love of God. End of quote. You know, we don't like to talk about sin a whole lot, right? We don't like to hear about sin a whole lot. And part of that is because of what is at the center of sin. I. And not just me, but the letter I, which is us. I. And that's a large part of why we don't like to hear about sin or talk about sin, because what it does is it causes us to look at ourselves and the ways that we do not follow the same value system, the same will and moral system of God. Sin is, as Theron Price says, against the very love of God. And sin is a debt, first of all, that we owe to God. We're indebted to God because we have rejected that love. Oh, I haven't rejected the love of God. I accept it all the time. God loves me. Well, yes, God does love us, and God does love us so much that Jesus came for us, and God is willing to forgive us. But then we turn around and we do things that break that relationship. And yes, God still loves us, but the relationship is not whole until we come to Him to pay that debt with our love, with our following of His grace, with a sense of seeking to overcome rebellion. I know we sing, Jesus paid it all to Him I owe. Sin has left a crimson stain. He washed it white as snow. But how often, we sing it so often, how often do we really think about the second phrase in that line, in that chorus? Jesus paid it all. And then we kind of don't want to really think about all to Him I owe. It's a recognition of indebtedness to God. An indebtedness that causes us to seek even more of the knowledge of God and God's grace, and then to do something with that. Sin is the opposite of true knowledge of God, that is the nature of God and the goodness of God. And so here, Paul says, don't owe anyone anything except to be indebted to love. Indebted to love. He talks about sin in so many ways. But that sin is opposed to grace and reconciliation and joy. Things which build up. And sin doesn't build up anything. And the lack of love for others is sinful and tears down relationships. And so while Paul is talking here, among other things, about being subject, beginning of this chapter, he talks about being subject to the governing authorities. Here he comes back and says the only thing that should be really the focus of our subjection, our indebtedness, is love. Oh, but I love you. Love you like a brother. That's what Peter said to Jesus. Interesting thing here, though. Paul does not use the word philein or phileo. No philia of soul. Well, it is Lent. He doesn't use philein, which is brotherly love, brotherly affection, the affection of a parent and a child and a child to a parent. We would like it if he did. I love you like a brother. I love you like a sister. Of course, if you really think about it, I don't know about your experience. I see a few grins even before I go there. If you had siblings and you love and you say, yeah, I love you like a brother, think about all the times you beat on your brother or your brother beat on you. Or you took that thing, that toy or whatever, or your sister. My sister still has a little bitty scar right here. Because one time we were playing and things weren't going all that great and she went to run that way and I took this fly swatter and I threw it like a spear. I was going to get her and it dabbed her right there. Bled. But, you know. So I don't know if you want me to love you like my sister. But he says here, you must agapas. Love one another. Comes from agape, or we generally pronounce it agape. It is that love which looks beyond the sin, looks beyond that which has been done to us, that seeks to love in spite of all of the wrong that is done. And so here Paul says, do not be indebted to anyone except for loving. And then he goes to what many people thought. Well, the law. The law. He says loving fulfills the law. And notice, it's not just saying, I love you, peck on the cheek. Or I love you, see you later. He goes to concrete things. Love is more than simply an emotion. Love is more than simply words. Love is an activity. If you really love somebody, you show them, right? And so here he says, you should always be trying to repay that debt of love. The commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and all the other commandments, those are action things. They're summed up in this word, active love. Active love. Not reactive love. Oh, well, you love me first, and okay, then I'll love you. But rather an active love that feels indebted to God and the life that God gives and the opportunities and the persons with whom God blesses our lives so that we might truly find love. Not some Valentine, give you a box of chocolates, emotional kind of thing. But rather a deep setting love that is there and embedded within us by God Himself, which looks beyond. Price continues to write later, and I quote, if you think about it, sin is almost as heavy as grace. It mars the divine image in ourselves, distorting our selfhood. and breaks down the self from within. It drags us down because of its heaviness. But ultimately, sin will not work for living. Its only resolution is to be uplifted by grace. End of quote. Paul says here, we are indebted. We're indebted to God in such a way that we are to live out the paying of that debt. A payment that we can never fully fulfill without His grace and without His assistance. And so he says, all the commandments are summed up in doing love. Not just in saying love, but in doing love. For he said, all of these are summed up in this word, love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong. Now, of course, sometimes we do wrong, but in the attitude of love, he's saying, love seeks to not do wrong. Love seeks to lift up. Love seeks to fulfill life and relationship with neighbor. Not just the neighbor that you like the best. Not just the neighbor that lives beside of you with whom your children have played and for whom you have babysat. Not just the neighbor that comes and sits beside you in a pew at church, but each and every neighbor that we encounter. For you see, we were not so lovable ourselves at one point in time. And yet God's love reached out. God's love gave us more grace than we ever should have had. Therefore, we follow that action. And as we are indebted and we have to pay off our mortgage, we have to pay off our car, we have to pay off our power bill, we have to do those kinds of things. So even more so are we indebted to God and the life with which He blesses us and the lives with which we share. Owing no one anything except agapas, a love which is like the love of God. It's a debt that oftentimes weighs upon me when I think about it, and therefore I don't like to think about it a whole lot. And yet, we can't put it aside because it is truly the only debt that we can never fully pay, which then leaves us something always to do. To love, to be loved, and to share love. In a moment we're going to come to table, and we will be reminded of that love that God shared with us and continues to share with us. But you see, Jesus didn't just die on a cross one time so that that would be it, and we wouldn't have to experience anything more. Jesus continually comes to us in love and in grace, and sometimes even in each other with the agapas to which we are indebted. And so as we come to table after our next hymn, may we be reminded of that love and that it was not because we're so lovable, but because God loves that we have this grace and that we are indebted. Our hymn is hymn number 349, reminding us as we come to table, oh, how He loves you and me. Hymn number 349, as we stand and sing, our altar is open. Oh, how He loves you and me.